February 22nd, 2017. Attendance is all over here except for Greg James. And could we all rise for the Pledge of Allegiance?
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Do we have any adjustments to the regular session agenda? Hearing none, I wanted to make a request for a future agenda item or a discussion item relating to a meeting that I had with City Attorney Greg Mott and Andy regarding cell phone criteria. And I'd like to have that scheduled in a regular session with consensus of the other commissioners, if you're all right with that, for a future time when we don't have as busy an agenda as we have tonight. So would that be okay with all of us?
A work session?
Actually, I'd like to have it in a regular session, if that's possible, and a brief Q&A. Okay, so we'll have that sometime in the future when we have less of a full agenda than we do tonight.
I guess my question would be, what is staff's response to your request?
No problems. We have, we normally identify topics of interest to the planning commission. City Attorney also identifies a number of topics to discuss throughout the year, space available. So, I wouldn't say that it happens very often, but it's okay. I'm not sure about having a discussion during the regular session. We normally, the regular session is reserved for decision making of some kind. That's why you can, you rarely make a decision on a work session.
I was thinking more on the line of a presentation than a brief Q&A, so not really a discussion.
I was going to ask if we could actually do both, where we have a little bit in the work session, and if you want to bring it into a regular session.
If you'd like a presentation, I think it would be more effective to do that, at least primarily in a work session, because it's a little bit easier. We can use the screens in there are a little bit more user-friendly for presenting information and doing a more informal Q&A. And it may make it easier to schedule, the other thing I was going to say is it may make it easier to schedule that sooner. Mm-hmm. I think the regular sessions tend to fill up with public hearings more often.
Yeah, the reason I was thinking having it in the open session is that there might be other participants who would benefit from it instead of in a work session. But I think if it's available sooner in a work session, it'd be better to have it sooner than later.
March 7th. We have a public hearing.
You can determine from the work session whether it progresses. Okay. From there.
All right. Okay. So let's see. So we will have that sometime in the future. Looking also for business from the audience. So anything that otherwise does not appear on the agenda. Is there any testimony from the audience? Hearing none, we will go into our public hearing. Oh, we do have
No, I'm waiting for the public hearing. I'm talking about the zoning change.
Okay,
yeah, that's this is that was for items not related.
Yes, I want to speak.
Okay, so then we are having a quasi-judicial public hearing tonight regarding Willamette Lane zoning map amendment. Which is for a moderately visible cellular tower application.
That's the incorrect title.
You have the new?
The updated.
He has the updated one?
Read it from the paper version, not from the...
Willamette Lane zoning map amendment, rezone approximately 11 acres of vacant land from low-density residential LDR to public land and open space PLO under TYP 317-00002. And first of all, we have a description of the quasi-judicial hearing from our city attorney.
The hearing tonight is characterized as a quasi-judicial hearing. Quasi-judicial means that certain due process procedural rights are associated with the decision-making process. These rights include the right to notice, the right to present evidence, to have a written decision based upon standards, and to an impartial decision maker. The primary purpose of the hearing is to establish a record upon which a decision can be made. The evidentiary rules associated with these hearings are less restrictive than used in circuit courts, and all relevant testimony, including hearsay testimony, may be considered. It is important to note that you must raise procedural and substantive issues at this hearing, or you will be prohibited from raising those issues subsequently on appeal before the Oregon Land Use Board of Appeals. A person raising the issue must support raising the issue with statements or evidence sufficiently specific so that the Planning Commission has an opportunity to respond to the concern or issue. If you are the applicant, you must raise concerns regarding any proposed conditions of approval to preserve your right to appeal and or seek damages in circuit court. Failure to raise constitutional or other issues related to the proposed conditions of approval with sufficient specificity to allow the Planning Commission to respond to the issues precludes an action for damages in circuit court. In a quasi-judicial decision-making process, the burden is on the applicant to show, by preponderance of the evidence, that all the applicable approval criteria have been met. Those criteria are posted on the wall, outlined in the staff report, and will be summarized by staff in their presentation. The record in this matter consists of the application and any supporting information, any staff report and supporting documents, and any testimony and documentary evidence submitted during this hearing. If you want an item entered into the record, present that item to the planning secretary, orally or in writing. If there is any question in your mind whether any material is in the record, make a point of asking that it be accepted into the record. By statute, you have the right to request that the record be held open for 7 days. You do not have to give a reason for the request, but you must make it before the hearing is closed. If new evidence is introduced during that time, the record can be held open for an additional period to allow other parties an opportunity to respond to new evidence.
Thank you very much.
You also have the right to request a continuance of the hearing. A continuance is discretionary with the Planning Commission. A party requesting it must show that prejudice to his or her rights will not be cured by merely holding the record open. The hearing is recorded on tape, so I ask those who wish to testify to follow a few procedures. First, please testify to the podium to my left, not from the citizen seats. Second, begin your testimony by stating your name and address for the record. This enables the Planning Secretary and Planning Commission to identify testimony offered by each speaker and will assist in creating a transcript of the hearing if it is necessary. Finally, if you want a copy of the written decision, please provide your name and address to the Planning Secretary. The Planning Commission will issue a written decision after the record is closed. The Planning Commission's, any person who participated in the hearing before the Planning Commission may appeal the Planning Commission's decision to the City Council. Please consult an attorney regarding the deadline for appeal and the form of an appeal. Oregon land use law requires that the Planning Commission disclose any ex parte contacts or conflicts of interest related to this matter and allow any person to challenge the Planning Commission for bias. A conflict of interest generally involves a situation where the decision maker, his or her family or business, would benefit or suffer by his or her decision. And an ex parte contact is a communication to the decision maker that includes substantive issues regarding the application and occurs outside the public venue. Commissioner, it is at this time appropriate to open the public hearing.
Open the public hearing on this matter. Are there any potential conflicts of interest or ex parte communications by any members? Hearing none, staff report.
Thank you. Good evening, commissioners. The property that is subject of this zoning map amendment request is approximately 11 acres in north central Springfield. It's close to the Oregon National Guard Armory on the southwest slope of Vitus Butte, and it's in the River Heights neighborhood. The property outlined in yellow is mostly a wooded hillside that was transferred to Willamette Lane with the River Heights subdivision, which was subdivided about 10 years ago. The property has been identified in the Blanna Lane Comprehensive Plan as a linear park, and it's locally known as Mole Mountain Linear Park. The topographic feature nearby is locally known as Mole Mountain. There are no specific plans for development of this property. It lends itself to passive recreation. Currently, there is kind of a stubbed gravel access road from the north and the south, and kind of informal trail that has been created along the base of the hillside there, on the east side of existing slough. The Willamette Lane Comprehensive Plan does not contemplate playfields or, you know, active recreation areas. However, there may be a paved pathway created in the future. This particular zoning map amendment is part of a bundle of applications that you'll be seeing this evening. This is the adjoining property to the Rainbow Water District property. You can see in the picture there that has an existing water reservoir tank and is subject to the discretionary use and site plan application that is subsequent. So this does set the stage for a change to the setback requirements upon redesignation, or sorry, rezoning from low density residential to public land and open space. However, staff does note that the public land and open space zoning is typically used in neighborhood parks and elsewhere within the community, and particularly because this site is identified in the Willamette Lane Comprehensive Plan. So, which I'll provide a diagram of that in a second here. Currently, the zoning for this property is low density residential, as is the neighborhood to the north and west. It does abut the Oregon National Guard property to the south, which is zoned light medium industrial. The Rainbow Water District site is zoned public land and open space. And the proposed zoning would create two contiguous properties, both zoned public land and open space, on the zoning map. A little hard to see. I've circled in red, it's called the Mo property on the Parks and Recreation Project list for Willamette Lane, and is identified, which is significant because this is a refinement plan to the Metro Plan, so it does have status as being identified within a refinement plan, which is one of your criteria for zoning map amendments. So that is contained in the staff report. So staff does find that the application meets the criteria of approval unconditionally. Staff is not recommending any conditions of approval. I would note that you did receive a supplemental list of findings. On the recommendation of the city attorney, the commissioners may remember just a couple weeks ago, we dealt with a plan amendment and zone change request for property off of High Banks, which was for a 7.1 acre property proposed for low density residential to light medium industrial. As a result of that review, staff recommended to the applicant that they provide additional Goal 12 findings demonstrating that there was not an impact to transportation network under the transportation planning rule. This is not a plan amendment. However, staff is encouraged through the city attorney to incorporate these findings. It certainly does no harm, and it bolsters the findings and argument in favor of this particular application as we move forward. So it would be expected that similar types of findings would be included with zoning map amendments subsequent to this one. This just happens to be the first one, and if anything, the transportation impact is reduced significantly going from a low-density residential, which could generate trips with houses, to a passive neighborhood park, which doesn't even have a parking lot or anything that would generate trips currently. So, however, for purposes of consistency, staff added these findings. Should the Planning Commission choose to adopt the amended staff report, these findings would be included. These were added after we went to press with the staff report. So the amended staff report incorporates the findings before you and would be appended to the final order should it be adopted this evening. be happy to answer any questions, and I do note that the applicant is here this evening and does have a presentation as well.
I do have one question. Given that ownership is the Lamb Lane Park District on this tract, was this property as LDR part of the residential lands inventory, buildable lands inventory?
Yes, but it's deemed to be constrained site because of the hillside.
Oh, the slope issues?
Correct, yeah.
Thank you.
Any other questions? Okay, testimony from the applicant.
Good evening. As Andy's bringing up the presentation, my name is Peter Mauro, M-A-U-R-O, with Centerline Solutions here representing Verizon Wireless. Address is 6623 Northeast 78th Court, Suite B1, Portland, Oregon, 97218. With me tonight, I also have Jesse Burgess with Centerline Solutions, and then Mike Connors with Hathaway Kobach Connors. I'm actually going to cede the floor to Jesse. He's going to go over the zoning map amendment, and then I'll be up later on for the discretionary use in the site plan review. So.
Evening. My name is Jesse Burgess. I'm with Centerline Solutions. Our address is 6623 Northeast 78th Court, Portland, Oregon, 97218. I'd like to thank Andy and the planning staff for all the help with this application. I think Andy covered pretty much everything, all the salient points of our application. I thought I'd add a little bit of a background, which I think is touched upon in the application, about the interdepartmental agreement that was entered into with the Rainbow Water District and Lima Lane. When Centerline Solutions was approaching the Water District, the issue of the setbacks arose, and I believe it was in those discussions that they raised the possibility of entering into an agreement with Lima Lane to have this rezoned, since it was already a planned development anyway. So that was sort of the impetus behind it, and we were happy to take on this application on behalf of the Lima Lane, since it served both of our purposes. I don't really have a lot to add beyond what Andy spoke to and what is in the application, but I'm happy to address any questions or any concerns that you have about this application.
Any questions from the commission? Thank you. Do we have any testimony in support of the application? Any testimony that is opposed to the application? Mr. Platt?
Yes.
Okay. Please come forward and give your name and address for the record.
All right. So it's I'm Dr. James Platt. I live at 3594 River Heights Drive. I'm representing tonight our homeowners group, and my zip code is 97477. I would like to just make a comment, and I have some questions about the paperwork. I wonder if we could put the map back up so I could highlight some areas of concern there. I would like to thank
photo.
Yeah, the aerial photo that's got the open, that one, yeah. So, and I wanted to thank Andy Langberg for his prompt request for my information and documents that I had asked for. So the comment is, one has been pointed out that there is a trail that connects River Heights and with this cul-de-sac. The area of concern is the cul-de-sac, and I don't know if you're nervous if I have to use a laser pointer back here.
But it actually won't show up on the screen, of course.
Want it? Okay.
Is it 37th place cul-de-sac?
Right. So, near the water tower to the right, that's Vitus Lane, and down to the end of the cul-de-sac, 37th place, that's a solid hillside from the old quarry, and it's a drop of over 100 feet. So that cul-de-sac is very isolated. It drive, when you drive down 37th Place and come to the end of that cul-de-sac, and it has become quite a hangout. We've had vandalism in the development. I personally, on New Year's Eve, had someone attempt to break into my house. They smashed a window and a screen to enter an art studio. And this is an ongoing problem. One of the problems, and one of the things I'd like to get into the record here, is that the streetlights on 37th Place, there's three of them, and they don't function. And they haven't functioned for over a year, and this pattern has developed to make this a hangout. The proposal, even though it's on a not on a timeline, to have a connecting trail that involves River Heights to the cul-de-sac to Marcola Road, provides yet another access that's going to be a problem area. So the homeowners would like to have the city get involved to make it, we can start working now to deter that cul-de-sac, which is dark and isolated, from being a hangout. And so that's what I would like to be sure gets into the record as a homeowner's concern. Okay. So some questions that we had looking at the application, section 2.3, we use the word eventually for the cell tower to be built. I wanted to communicate back to our people what, if the regulatory process goes smoothly, what it would be a probable start date for that tower. Can you tell me that?
I'm sorry, sir, is that the first of several questions, or the only question? Is the applicants are probably the ones who have all the insight on that. So okay. If you want to go through all your questions, then they can.
Okay. They can all right. My second question then is section 2.4, the multi-use path. What is multi-use, and will it exclude motorized vehicles like dirt bikes and ATVs? Yes?
I believe multi-use is for pedestrians and bicycles.
Okay. Yes, right.
Or emergency vehicles.
Okay, well, and maintenance, I suppose, for the... So,
the idea of a multi-use path would be to enable primarily bikes and pedestrians to either go to a site and, you know, recreate or whatever, or pass through on their way from point A to point B or other points. It's actually the only place that it exists in the code and for the city is in Glenwood. But we're just right now coincidentally talked about this today of providing new code language that will enable these things to go.
Well, I think what I heard is motorized vehicles will not
be allowed.
So that takes care of that. And other than that, a little more information.
I think probably the only motorized vehicles would be emergency vehicles, like if there was someone injured there. Probably maintenance vehicles.
Right.
And then the third item would be motorized vehicles for handicapped individuals. So
okay.
Carts.
All right. So then section 5.1.3 again uses the word multi-path for the rest of it. So you've answered that. So anyway, you can see that's our concern is we're experiencing vandalism in problem areas in that hangout area. We have new residents that are there and they're already wary, you know, getting skittish about there's a new house at 37th Place and Vitus Lane, and there's a house at River Heights and 37th. And there have been a number of calls to the police to try to get them out to control this hangout. So we want to work long term to deter that. So I hope you'll incorporate that in your thinking. And so the question about eventually on the timing, someone asked, I need to report back to our group about that.
I don't know exactly if it's going to be built this year or maybe next year, but I've just sent a request to find out that information. So hopefully by the end of the meeting, I'll let you know.
Okay, good. All right, thank you very much.
Can I just follow up on one of just wanted to follow up on one of Dr. Platt's comments regarding the street lighting.
Staff is aware of the issue. Customer service request was entered for transportation division. The problem is wire theft, and so there's a fairly substantial cost in replacing the wire. It will be done, and of course, as residents move into the area as well, ensure that the public streets are safely illuminated, but the city's kind of behind the budget issue right now for replacement of stolen wire. So that's one of the complications in addressing this in a timely manner.
Do we have any additional testimony opposed to the application? Do we have testimony neither in support nor opposed to the application? Is there a staff summary?
Staff stands by the recommendation before you in the staff report and findings with the inclusion of the additional findings. So staff is recommending adoption of the amended staff report with this application, and believes that the application meets the criteria of approval before you this evening. The zoning map amendment.
Any additional statement from the applicant?
Not this time, no.
Are there any requests to continue the public hearing, extend the public hearing, or extend the written record, or both? Hearing none, do I hear a motion to close the public hearing?
Move to close the public hearing.
Second. All those in favor of closing the public hearing?
Aye.
Aye.
Who seconded that? Okay, thank you.
Okay. Are there any, is there any discussion or do I have a motion to extend the written record? Hearing none, is there a motion to close the written record?
I move to close the written record.
Second?
I second that.
All those in favor of closing the written record?
Aye.
Aye.
Okay. Discussion or possible questions to the staff or public? Hearing none, is there a motion to approve or approve conditions or deny the application?
I move to approve TYP 317-00002 Verizon Wireless's application on behalf of the Lamb Lane Parks and Rec District to rezone approximately 11 acres on Vitus Butte, identified as Assessor's Map 17-02-30-12, Tax Lot 5000, from low density residential to public land and open space, because the application meets the applicable criteria of approval.
Second.
All those in favor?
Aye.
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 The second item tonight is a discretionary use for Centerline Solutions, LLC, on behalf of T-Mobile Wireless for a high visit. Discretionary use and site plan amendments. Moderate visibility, cellular tower application, Centerline Solutions, LLC, on behalf of Verizon Wireless. TYP 317-00001 and TYP 217-00001. First of all, is there anyone in the audience who would like to hear what the quasi-judicial process involves?
Not who would like to hear it. Is there anyone in the audience who was not here when the first statement of rights was read?
Yes.
Is there anyone who's arrived since that time?
But I'm pretty good with the, I'm not sure you can repeat it for my benefit.
Were you here when it was read the first time?
No.
I need to read it. Per state law, I have to read it again. I'm sorry. This hearing tonight is characterized as quasi-judicial hearing. Quasi-judicial means that certain due process procedural rights are associated with this decision-making process. These rights include the rights to notice, to present evidence, to have a written decision based upon standards, and to an impartial decision-maker. The primary purpose of the hearing is to establish a record upon which a decision can be made. The evidentiary rules associated with this hearing is less restrictive than circuit courts, and all relevant testimony, including hearsay, can be considered. It is important to note that you must raise procedural and substantive issues at this hearing, or you will be prohibited from raising those issues subsequently on appeal before the Oregon Land Use Board of Appeals. A person raising the issue must support raising the issue with statements or evidence sufficiently specific so that counsel has an opportunity to respond to the concern or issue. If you are the applicant, you must raise concerns regarding any proposed condition of approval to preserve your right to appeal and or seek damages in circuit court. Failure to raise constitutional or other issues relating to proposed conditions of approval with sufficient specificity to allow the Planning Commission to respond to the issues precludes an action for damages. In a quasi-judicial decision-making process, the burden is on the applicant to show by preponderance of the evidence that all of the applicable approval criteria have been met. Those criteria are posted on the wall behind the Planning Commission and are outlined in the staff report and will be summarized by staff in a presentation. The record in this matter consists of the application and supporting information, any staff report and supporting documents, and any testimony and documentary evidence admitted during this hearing. If you want an item entered into the record, present that item to the planning secretary orally or in writing. If there is any question in your mind whether any material is in the record, make a point of asking that it be accepted into the record. By statute, you have the right to request that the record be held open for 7 days. You do not have to give a reason for the request, but you must make it before the hearing is closed. If new evidence is introduced during that time, the record may be held open for an additional period to allow other parties an opportunity to respond to new evidence. You also have the right to request a continuance of the hearing. A continuance is discretionary with the Planning Commission, and the party requesting it must show the prejudice to his or her rights will not be cured by merely holding the record open. The hearing is recorded, so I ask those who wish to testify to follow some procedures. First, please testify from the podium on my left. Second, begin your testimony by stating your name and address for the record. This enables the Planning Secretary and the Commission to identify testimony offered by speaker and assist in creating a transcript if necessary. Finally, if you want a copy of the written decision, please provide your name and address to the Planning Secretary. The Planning Commission will issue a written decision after the record is closed. Any person who participated in the hearing may appeal the Planning Commission's decision to the City Council. Please consult an attorney regarding the deadline for appeal and the form of appeal. Oregon land use law requires that the Planning Commission disclose ex parte conflicts or conflicts of interest related to this matter and allow any person to challenge the Planning Commission for bias. A conflict of interest involves a situation where the decision maker, his or her family or business, would benefit or suffer by his or her decision, and an ex parte contact is a communication to the decision maker that includes substantive issues regarding the application and occurs outside the public venue. Commissioner, at this time, it's appropriate to open the public hearing.
Hereby open the public hearing. Are there any commission members who have to declare potential conflicts of interest or ex parte contact? Hearing none, may we have the staff report? Thank you.
Thank you. Commissioners, this particular application is for the adjoining property we just spoke about up on Vitus Butte. This particular property is owned by Rainbow Water District. They have a 4 million gallon steel water tank on the site, and it's part of their system for water service in North Springfield. The site is annexed to the City of Springfield, and the proposed tower is at the rear or the west edge of the property, at the crest of the hillside. Currently, as previously stated, this site is zoned for public land and open space. And under a recent code amendment that the commissioners also reviewed previously, moderate visibility wireless telecommunication system facilities or cell towers are allowable on public land and open space properties subject to discretionary use and site plan. The particulars of this site plan, the applicant is proposing a 125-foot monopine or imitation tree along the western edge of the site on the edge of the wooded hillside. There is existing tree cover along the site, and the applicant proposes to mimic the existing types of trees on the site with this particular tower. The design of the tree is shown in the applicant's site plan. And the applicant is also proposing to install a backup power generator on the site. Because of this power generator, which is proposed to be diesel-fired, and its location at the crest of the hill above a water feature and a natural area to the west, staff has identified a couple of conditions of approval that are outlined in the staff report and findings for the site plan. Staff has also identified some recommended conditions of approval for the discretionary use, and I'll outline them. These include the branching pattern for the tree that is the monopine facility is recommended to be a what's referred to as a 3-branch-per-foot pattern, which is a more densely branched type of facility than a pine tree. This is a similar type of facility that has been utilized elsewhere. One example is off of South 42nd and Jasper Road. And so that's the type of facility that would blend in well with this hillside. It wasn't specific in the applicant's submittal as to the type of branching pattern, so staff has recommended clarifying that. The other recommended condition is to submit a photo simulations. They are contained in the applicant's packet, and admittedly, the tree proposed facility does blend in well with the hillside, but to just update those photos to represent the branching pattern that's selected for this particular facility. The final issue is because this site is somewhat isolated from other noise generating type of sources, and presumably there will be a cycle that the backup power generator will go through just to maintain functionality. Staff is recommending that the applicant provides information about the duration and frequency and timing of this cycling, such that it can be anticipated and also communicated to the neighborhood if need be. Staff is recommending daytime, weekday hours when other activity in the neighborhood would not make the sound as conspicuous as nighttime running of the generator. And I believe that that's the type of maintenance regime that can be scheduled and timed automatically. Those are the recommended conditions of approval for the discretionary use. Staff does note that there are some associated as well with the site plan. Some are pretty straightforward and more or less standard conditions. I did do want to note that recommendation number 2 is for adequate secondary containment of the diesel fuel tank that's proposed for the backup power generator. The other issue identified by the fire marshal's office is that this site and the generator itself is removed from the nearest fire hydrant. It's set back too far for fire response. So the recommendation is to either switch to a natural gas fire generator or to provide a fire hydrant on or adjacent to the property to allow for fire suppression activities should it be needed. Finally, the site driveway, which runs out onto Vitus Lane, only the extreme edge of it has been paved. There's a concrete apron, a driveway approach, and then what would be a future sidewalk. It's just on this property, doesn't connect to the adjoining vacant parcels yet. However, under the provisions of the development code, driveways are to be paved at least 18 feet back from the property line, so that primarily to prevent tracking of materials out onto the sidewalk and the road surface. That is occurring at present, and so staff identified that as an issue during a recent site visit when we were observing the site and posting the notification on the property as well. So that is one recommended condition as well. The other conditions and findings are outlined in the staff reports. I'll be happy to answer any questions that we can. The applicant is here. They do have a more detailed presentation, I believe, and could answer technical questions, but I'd be happy to answer any other questions as we continue the staff report and findings.
Hearing none, testimony from the applicant.
Again, thank you this evening. Peter Morrow, it's M-A-U-R-O, with Centerline Solutions here representing Verizon Wireless. Our address is 6623 Northeast 78th Court, Suite B1, Portland, Oregon, 97218. Again this evening, Jesse Burgess from my office and Mike Connors from Halfway Quebec Connors. Wanted to go ahead and start by thanking Andy. He's been very helpful in this whole process, and as well as the commission. I know I haven't personally been here. I'm relatively new to the project, but I know that Mike's been here quite a bit, and some other folks from our company. So thank you for all your time and working through this. Andy did a pretty good job of summarizing the whole project. So I'll go relatively quickly, so please feel free to jump in if you have any technical questions. Property is at 3200, I believe it's pronounced Vitus Lane, or Vitus Lane. The property currently owned by Rainbow Water District, where they have their water tank. You can see the properties here, the two properties in relation to each other, the discretionary use site plan review property, where the tower will be, and then the Willamette Lane property that we just discussed earlier. I wanted to start out with what this facility will mean for the community here. This is an existing coverage map of existing Verizon network. So that brownish color, that's like best, getting really good solid coverage inside a house, on the street, wherever you are. And then obviously kind of downgrading from there. So yellow is still gonna be pretty solid, but it's gonna start getting a little iffy inside. Red, you're maybe not be able to make a phone call inside, in the street you'll probably be okay. And then white, we consider unreliable coverage. So you might be able to download stuff, you might be able to download a movie or a TV show or something, other kind of media, but you're not consistently going to be able to do that. This is after. So same color scheme, you can see to the south how much darker those two nodes are, kind of the southeast and southwest of the site, and then how much further the coverage extends to the north. I'll go back and forth here a couple times so you can kind of see the difference. So you can see to the north, a lot of that red and a lot of that white space turns into yellow, if not green. So we're expanding coverage here fairly substantially. Again, this is from the staff report. That was a nice site map of where the site is. One of the constraints that we had to work around with Rainbow is that there is some plans potentially for the future for a second tank there. So that's why we're kind of all the way to the western edge of the property where the slope starts going down. It is for a 125-foot monofer or monopine tower. We've looked into it, and the density of the branches shouldn't be a big deal. So once we start moving forward with our construction drawings, we should be able to meet that. Access will be off of Vitus Lane. There's an existing access road, and then we're going to have to add some existing access around the tanks. With that, we will also be bringing in power and fiber line to the site. So that'll all be trenched underground. We'll have easements with Rainbow for all that. One of the things that we're looking into, I'll go to this slide here. So we are proposing a generator, and there are a few conditions associated with that generator because it's diesel powered. As Andy suggested in the staff report, we are looking into a natural gas generator. Northwest Natural does have lines running along Vitus, as well as the road to the north, which I'm bringing the name of at the moment. I want to say it's River Ridge or River View. So we are looking into potentially doing a natural gas power generator. So again, that those lines would run along that same easement to the site for that. The site is just at the top of the slope. We thought initially we were going to have to do some retaining wall work, and maybe some shoring up the slope, but it doesn't look like we'll need to do that this time. but we are proposing landscaping all around the site, you know, which will help with some of the noise as well. In terms of the firing of the generator, Andy's correct that it is a regular cycle. It's actually every 2 weeks, I believe, on Mondays. And it is done during daylight hours. So we're okay with that condition. And, you know, obviously we wanna be good neighbors. So, you know, if you guys need to restrict that, you know, please just let us know. This is a really nice picture, I thought. I also stole this from Andy. This kind of oblique view shows a really good kind of where the tower's gonna sit in relation to those trees. I know that you guys did a lot of work with the code amendment and now the zoning amendment, but I think the site is really what you guys are going to want in terms of kind of siting of a site of a tower. You know, we're going to be in the trees. It's on public property, serving, you know, residential zones around it. You know, this is the elevation that Andy showed, but then I wanted to get to this. So these are the photo simulations. This is from Vitas Lane, just near the access road or the curb cut. You can see that it, you know, the tree is obviously a bit of a brighter green than we'll want to be in the end, but you can see where it kind of blends in with the tree cover. A little further away from down the hill, again, you can see there's a pretty substantial density of trees there, so this is going to blend in really nicely. And then one more from either further away, just to the point where it's just going to be kind of part of the existing tree coverage. I think that was pretty much everything I had. In terms of build schedule, Dr. Platt, so it's hard to say sometimes, so, you know, we're kind of, these sites are bound by budget schedules and budget cycles for the client, the carrier. So I think this is a 2018 site, but, you know, things are going well, and so it might get pulled into 2017. I can't guarantee that. So if it's a 2017 site, it'll probably get started construction sometime in the fall. If it's a 2018 site, probably sometime towards the end of the year, if not the beginning of next year. I can't guarantee any of that at this point, though, but that's kind of the typical schedule for these construction, for these builds. I think that was everything. Everything I wanted to touch on. Yeah, so I don't know if there's any questions from the planning team.
A question now, or why don't we join?
We'll ask for testimonies from, I think, from the audience later. Mr. Landon.
I was going to ask on the generator. I know the LNG generators are typically fairly quiet. You know, if you go with the, they pretty well decided to go with the LNG, and what noise do you anticipate?
I don't have a like a noise study or like a noise report or even like a spec sheet at this time. There was something that's not very common. We usually go with diesel generators, but I can find that information out if there's like a spec sheet on it. And I would say that greater than 50-50, that will go with the natural gas at this point.
I know, for instance, you remember the one that we did. 42nd and Jasper, I think it was like 54 dB. It was really quiet. So
for the natural gas or
for the natural gas.
Okay, yeah. I know even the diesels when they start, you know, they initially make some noise, but once they're humming, they get pretty quiet. So okay. Yeah, I'll see if I can find something for you.
Could you clarify, if you don't mind, on the paving? I'm a little bit concerned about erosion on the driveway.
Is that me or Brandy? I mean, we can certainly, I don't see any problem with us paving that 18 feet. I think it has to do with tracking the material from the subject property onto the drive, onto the public right of way, and just it's a kind of a cleanliness issue.
Yeah. Typically in all applications that where there is a driveway that abuts a curb and gutter paved street, it's preferable to have the pavement, preferable to have a paved driveway the entire length, but staff recognizes that the usage of this driveway will be minimal. That'll be occasional maintenance visitation by Rainbow Water District and Verizon staff once everything's constructed. However, having an additional 18 feet driveway extending into the property means that it can be parked upon. if necessary, when someone's opening a gate to get access to the site, and also prevents gravel and dirt from either being tracked by the vehicles, or also it's on a bit of a slope as well from eroding down onto the sidewalk and into the street itself. So it provides a dual benefit, and it's consistent with development code requirements as well. So now that the site is going to be seeing some, potentially some construction vehicles and then maintenance vehicles on a regular schedule, staff wanted to alert the applicant of this need to pave the driveway apron essentially.
That would be my only concern as far as that's concerned, because, you know, I mean, if there's nothing there, then you have shrubbery and things like that that are beating.
Yeah, right now there is an access driveway, and it's mostly gravel and dirt, and so it's it is experiencing some erosion currently. Correct. Yeah, from there is some construction activity in the neighborhood right now. Some utility line installation, so on. So there's vehicles that are using that driveway. It may not even necessarily be our Rainbow Water District vehicles. They may be just from part of the neighborhood construction, because there's an area to get off of the road there and park, you know, elsewhere. But it's definitely experiencing some tracking of materials there. So this is to ensure in the long term, once the neighborhood's built out, it doesn't continue.
Yeah, I'm just thinking, I mean, you mentioned 18 feet. This looks like a lot further than 18 feet. I'm just thinking of some sort of gravel or something to abate erosion back to the antenna.
Oh, I see. Yes, the applicant's proposing to put in a gravel driveway vehicle track between the entrance gate and their compound, which is at the rear of the Rainbow Water District property. Staff is referring to just the interface with the public street where we definitely don't pavement. The remainder can be gravel.
Thank you.
And that's relatively low, almost zero slope.
Yeah,
where the water tower
is. Yeah.
There shouldn't be too much erosion.
It's kind of near the edge of the hill, but that's why I guess I'm concerned.
Yeah, once you get right to the tower, it dives off really steep. But right where the water tower is, it's pretty flat.
And just so you know, the Verizon technician, they're out there about once a month, if not less. And they just have like a pickup truck. So not heavy vehicle, other than construction, obviously, where there is at least some machinery out there.
Thank you.
Thank you very much, and we're here for any more questions.
Do we have any testimony in support of the application? Can you step up and give your name and address, please?
Oh, thank you.
Hi, good evening. I'm Jamie Porter, Superintendent for Rainbow Water District. Our office is at 1550 42nd Street, and thank you for your time this evening. I just wanted to state, obviously, that we are in support of this. We were happy to work with Willamette Lane on the adjacent neighbor and make sure it worked for them. This is a facility where we know we have a good hilltop location. It would help boost the signal strength and be a benefit to the neighbors, and it was an underutilized resource. We do want to make sure that we're protecting ourselves for our 20-year master plan and looking ahead, and so that's why, you know, we said this is how much we have available, and so there was a limitation on where it could go. If I could just address the driveway issue real quick, we only took the deed for Tract B, which was that driveway entrance from Breeden Brothers in December. So they are still developing the lots adjacent to that. They've had construction access, so that hasn't been a pressing issue to get that paved because they're still parking their gear there. But that makes sense. That would be something that needs to follow. And so just wanted to share that we are in support of it. We have tried to work with neighbors in Willamette Lane especially and make sure it would work down the road. Sub has a pump station on that same lot, and so Sub and Rainbow both, you know, 2 pickups a day for maintenance and security checks is pretty much all for the active traffic. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Porter. Is there any testimony opposed to the application? Hearing none, is there any testimony neither in support nor opposed to the application? Dr. Platt.
Yes. So James Platt, 3594 River Heights Drive, Springfield, 97477. Homeowners are neutral on this. There's no big issue. just some information that we were looking for. You've answered as best you could about the potential start date. If there was some information I could communicate on this generator backup, you've given me some useful information on maybe every 2 weeks on a Monday. Is there any decibel numbers that go with this? Like, or can it be communicated to me after this meeting?
Yeah, as I discussed with the commissioner, I can find the spec sheets and see what we have, and I'll get them to Andy.
Yeah, I have his contact.
Okay, and the picture that you showed, that showed the small amount of the tower being above the cell tower being above the water tank, was that taken directly at the driveway? No, not quite.
No, just to the south.
Okay, can you guesstimate? The tank is 50 feet high. The tower is 125. Are we seeing the top 20 feet of the tank of the tower? Or what do you think?
Maybe a little bit more than that.
Maybe a third? I think there's a Boy Scout.
I'm guessing it's probably about 40, the top 40 feet.
Top 40 feet.
Just based on where the antennas are.
Okay. So, and lastly, I think in Andy's report, it sounded like there was another tower located somewhere that uses this design. Did I hear that right?
Yes.
And where is that?
That's on the northwest corner of Jasper Road at South 42nd Street.
Jasper and 42nd. Okay, that's very helpful. All right. Those are just some of the issues that we had. I appreciate the opportunity to talk to you folks tonight. Thank you.
Thank you for your testimony. Is there a summation by staff?
Staff recommends the approval of the discretionary use subject to conditions as recommended in the staff report and findings. Similarly, staff recommends approval of the accompanying site plan review subject to the recommended conditions and findings you find in the staff report. Based on the testimony of the applicant and Dr. Platt and staff's testimony this evening, we don't believe there's any need to change those, and they could be have sufficient flexibility to allow for changes to the generator design, et cetera, as has been identified by the applicant. I believe in the, to address one of the questions from Dr. Black, I believe that the applicant's noise study had about, I think it was around a 55 to 57 decibel noise rating for about 20 feet away from the generator, which is not much more than your dishwasher in your house. That's what I found out because I had to get a new dishwasher recently. So. It would be, I guess, not particularly noticeable, particularly with the screening, buffering of trees, and the tank itself, but it will be, I guess, a difference in the neighborhood once it does start to cycle. So it will be helpful to have the manufacturer spec sheets, and staff will be happy to forward those on to Dr. Platt or any other interested residents in the neighborhood.
Okay. Thank you. Is there any additional statement from the applicant? Any rebuttal to any testimony?
No, I think we're all set. Thank you very much.
Okay. Are there any requests to continue the public hearing or extend the written record? Okay.
To be clear, if you wanted that spec sheet before you made a decision on the site plan review, you would need to leave the record open to allow that. But if you're wanting that for purely informational FYI purposes, and it's not going to affect your decision in this matter, then you don't need to leave the record open.
I don't feel as if I need it.
Okay. I agree.
Okay. So, since there is no request to continue public hearing or to extend the written record, do I hear a motion to close?
Move to close the public hearing.
Do I have a second?
Second.
All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Is there a motion to close the written record?
I move that we close the written record.
Second?
Second.
Those in favor?
Aye.
Okay. The written record and the public hearing are hereby closed. Any discussion, possible questions to the staff or to the applicant?
I think just, I'd like that informational thing, you know, and the noise level for the generator down the road, maybe if that's possible.
Just really quick, we haven't made the final determination yet, but as soon as we do, we'll get you the noise spec sheets, one by one.
Appreciate that, thank you.
Any discussion? I did notice that all of the findings that staff made were actually really good catches on the containment, the driveway paving, and the branch density. I think all of those were really good good additions to the driveway. I'm very much in support of them. So, any further questions or discussion? Do I hear a motion to approve or approve the conditions or deny the application based on the information contained in the staff report, oral and written testimony, and all other evidence submitted to the record?
I move that we approve TYP 316-00001 Centerline Solutions LLC on behalf of Verizon Wireless's application for a moderate visibility wireless telecommunication system facility at 3200 Vitus Lane, map 17-02-30-00, tax lot 801, with conditions of approval contained in the staff report and findings.
So a real quick clarification, there's a typo in the motions and it's TYP 317-00001.
Okay, I'll amend my motion to indicate TYP 317 rather than 316.
Do we have a second?
Second.
No. All
in
favor?
Who did that?
Aye.
And you second.
Okay. Do we have a motion to approve the site plan amendment?
A move to approve TYP 217-00001 Centerline Solutions LLC on behalf of Verizon Wireless's site plan approval at 3200 Vitus Lane, map 17-02-30-00, tax lot 801, with the conditions of approval contained in the staff report and findings.
Second?
Second.
All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
The next item of business for the commission, communication memorandum to the Planning Commission regarding the Virginia Daisy Bikeway project.
It's just information for you.
Yeah, I don't see them in here tonight. So, but if you have any questions about this, I'll be sure to otherwise.
If there's been any significant amendments to the plan for the project, I would appreciate seeing them. If possible.
I think the main issue with the communication was simply the start of this construction.
But they did say that they were working on the
project. Yeah, there's processes that are taking longer than as far as getting approvals.
Okay. Do I understand that we're now in early 2018 on that?
Yeah, 2018.
As I recall, we had, you know, discussion here as to what parts of the plan you might see, you know, whether we wonder around about, et cetera. So if those plans have been revised, it'd be great to see it.
I suppose it was supposed to be completed within non-construction sales, so it should be completed in 2018.
Okay. Do we have any report from the city council?
Thank you.
Yep.
Anyone attending the council meeting?
We both attended last night's council meeting. Nobody was there.
You want me to give a summary?
Andy was a star last night.
Really?
Council.
Yes, if you would. As commissioners recall, the Metro Plan Amendment and Zone Change for the LDS church site off High Banks was brought before the city council last night. The recommendations of the commission were for approval of the plan designation and zone change. With the adopted findings for transportation and the trip cap. The trip cap created some confusion and a lot of questions with the city council. It wasn't clear to councilors exactly what that meant and the implications for partial development of the site with a low trip generating type of use, what that meant for the balance of the site that at present is proposed to be vacant. So that was a little unsettling. As well, there was some confusion as to whether the trip cap represented traffic directed out onto High Banks or any direction from the site, which could include the adjoining High Banks Business Park as an example if there was a common driveway created between the sites. So the staff, including myself and the applicant and their traffic engineer, spent a fair amount of time talking with councilors about the notion of a trip cap, the implications of trip cap, and as well exactly what type of development could occur on the site and what the implications would be for this particular development. The council also had expressed reservations about conversion of low-density residential identified in the residential housing inventory to an industrial use, particularly with the current initiative to expand the urban growth boundary and not wanting to derail any sort of parallel track items that the city had already identified a deficit of commercial industrial buildable lands and a surplus of residential. So there was some, I guess, a little bit of discomfort amongst the mayor and some of the councilors over whether this could alert other decision makers that, you know, what's going on here and shine a light on unnecessarily on the city's UGB expansion that is, you know, almost finalized. Am I missing anything? No, it was longer, you know, a longer discussion, more involved than I guess I anticipated, especially in light of the extended public hearing that had been done through the Planning Commission, additional findings that the commission had reconvened to deliberate and adopt recommendations based on additional information. So I guess that same comfort level wasn't experienced with city council on this. They did give first reading to the adopting ordinance, and so it remains to be seen whether second reading will be granted at the next meeting on March 6th or whether it will be, there'll be some further discussion.
Are you anticipating we're having to run that gauntlet again with this rezoning that we've processed tonight?
Well, that one won't go to the council.
Oh, okay.
This was an actual decision, but there is at least one more Metro Plan Amendment and Zone Change that will be coming before the commission in an upcoming month or two. And so that also will end up going to the city council.
This one about 58th and Main?
This one is on 5th Street north of Fred Meyers.
Oh,
I did not get that plan, that application initially. I'm inheriting it from a departing colleague, and so I'm going to have to brush up on that one. I think taking a low and medium density residential property, or kind of an aggregation of properties, and making it medium and high density residential, so increasing density, which in many cases could be welcomed, but I mean, not necessarily by the neighborhood, we'll see. So it does represent, I guess, a bit of a balance to removal from some inventory of low-density residential, and then compensating for it elsewhere in the community, and not through, it was not a deliberate action on part of staff, it was just happenstance.
Is that for the sake of affordable housing, or is that designated as such?
It's not designated affordable housing, I don't believe.
Because I know that's one of the key goals of the mayor and the council, is affordable housing.
Affordable housing is generally defined as housing for which there's a deed restriction that limits the rate, the rent you can charge, or the affordability level. And I don't think that there's any of that proposed with this, because usually that involves the application for state tax credits.
I know, we're ahead of ourselves here.
Yeah, it would add to the housing stock, and potentially, you know, for, you know, renters, not owners.
But it may be effectively affordable housing, was what I was trying to say, you know, not by definition.
I guess a different type of housing form than we've seen recently, because it's been predominantly single-family housing and some duplexes.
The state, prior to Senate Bill 1594, I think, there was a bill recently that was enacted by the legislature that allows cities to do exclusionary zoning, depending upon the size of the development, the number of units that are being proposed. City can adopt ordinances that then require a certain percentage of that, up to, I think, a maximum of 13% or 15% for affordable. And then there's a definition of affordable in that law that's different than the federal definition of affordable. But up until that piece of law was adopted, the state considered multifamily residential to be a city's default for affordable housing. And so, conversely, they considered low-density residential not to be affordable housing. Anyway, it's a mysterious web that's been woven. The other action last night that's of interest, at least to our division, is a supplemental budget was approved, and that included permanent funding for an additional plan reviewer inspector. So that is expressly to provide more resources to review and approve specific kinds of development applications, so that there are two inspectors that are frequently overloaded with work because of their certifications or doing other activities. So they will be free to focus exclusively on inspections. So that performance will be appreciated by the community, having inspections done in the day they're requested, almost always, I hope. But also it'll relieve the plans examiner of having to look at every single plan. So it's going to be nice. We're going to start recruiting probably next week. That'll be good.
Okay. Is there any business from the planning board?